From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. Affordable housing isn't affordable at all if you rely on a minimum wage salary to pay your rent and to keep the lights on. The National Low Income Housing Coalition has just released its annual report, appropriately titled Out of Reach. It details what it costs to rent two-bedroom apartments around the country on a minimum wage salary. Our reporter Allison Keyes talks with Danilo Pelletier, Research Director for the National Low Income Housing Organization, about what this report means for families that rely on meager salaries.
Well, this year's study sadly uncovered what we've uncovered in past year's studies, which is that housing, particularly rental housing, is out of reach for most low-income Americans.
You've been doing this study every year since 1989. What has surprised you, besides the fact that the federal minimum wage of $5.15 an hour hasn't changed since 1997?
Yeah, I mean, the big surprise, I think, often, and the reason why this report is such a revelation for people, is that we often think of the problem existing in a lot of the big metropolitan areas, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, but we don't realize that it actually is nationwide, and a lot of the rural counties have the same problem. So when we publish a report, and we publish it with wages across the entire country for all the counties, people are able to look and say, wow, that's what it costs, and that's why I'm having problems affording my rent.
If you are a minimum wage worker working 40 hours a week in a city like New York, Chicago, or California, how many hours would you have to work? How many hours should you be working a week, I should say, to afford housing?
Well, I mean, nominally, let's take Los Angeles as an example. If you are working 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, no vacation, no sick time, nothing like that, you would have to work 128 hours a week to afford a two-bedroom apartment. Now, obviously, that is unlikely, but if you think about it in terms of a family of two or three people earning minimum wage, then you begin to understand what this means for people, is that even if they're working and working full-time and working incredible hours, they're not able to afford their housing.
California has the highest cost, right? Where are some of the lower places?
Lower places are places like Starr County, Texas, and places in West Virginia, and we do include Puerto Rico in this survey. Now, the issue there, of course, is that many of these areas are rural areas where both wages are significantly lower, but also the opportunity for full-time, year-round employment is also significantly lower. And so, the lower housing wage is often met with lower wages in those areas.
What did your studies show about the percentage of income that poorer families are having to spend to keep an apartment?
Well, I mean, I think that what we've seen in this research, but in other research that we're doing, is that American families in general are spending a lot more on their housing as a sort of total of their income. The federal standard for affordability, and this is a standard that's also often used by the finance industry, is 30% of your income. If you're spending over 30% of your income on housing, and that includes rent and utilities or mortgage payments and utilities, you're considered to be living in unaffordable housing, and it's sort of a benchmark to say there's likely to be trouble here. Now, what we've seen is over the last couple of years, the percentage of people who are spending over 30% of their income, and indeed over 50% of their income, has grown considerably. So, again, it seems like this is a growing problem, and I have to say a major concern here is that people are very likely paying their rent or their mortgage, but when they get done paying that, they're finding they don't have a lot of money left over for medical insurance or retirement or education or these sorts of things, let alone, for many people, food. And so that's also the big concern here.
Are there any solutions your organization is suggesting for this? Are federal officials aware of this? Are there any initiatives that you know of that are going on to make this change?
We are a national organization, and that's where we focus. And so for us at the national level right now, the big concern is full funding for a lot of the federal housing programs, and very specifically the Housing Choice Voucher program, which is also commonly known as Section 8, which is a program that traditionally has had a lot of bipartisan support and has helped a lot of people, currently about 2 million families in the United States, afford their rent, renting sort of on the open market. Under the current administration, that program has seen both program cuts proposed and actually carried out, and also a number of sort of policy actions that have destabilized the program significantly. Obviously, for tenants, that's bad enough, but for the landlords who participate in the program, who are not compelled to do so, it's often a good reason to get out of the program. And once you lose landlords, then the ability to use a voucher is significantly reduced. So we're really looking, the big focus right now is on shoring up that program and making sure that it's not only supported but expanded. The other thing is building more low-income housing, and we've proposed a National Housing Trust Fund, which would treat housing a little like we treat roads, as a long-term investment in our country.
Danilo Pelletier is the research director for the National Low-Income Housing Coalition. His organization recently released its annual Out of Reach report. He joined us by telephone from his offices in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was reporter Allison Keyes.